No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right, first off, let me say, I am starving for some new Marvel content. Wow, I didn't think this break would kill me as much as it is, but I'm continuing my rewatch, but I am just missing the Marvel Cinematic Universe. As soon as a new trailer comes out, or as soon as some new content comes out, as early as next year, Friends From Work will be rolling again. So be sure to subscribe to Friends From Work and check that out. But wow, it has been almost 2 years since I did a Friends From Football episode, dating all the way back to 2023 when Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles. And I know this will be a small market here. I know that there's not a lot of crossover between Marvel fans and Kirk Cousins fans, or NFL fans, or Minnesota Vikings fans, or in this case, Atlanta Falcons fans. But this is really just going to be because I want to do it, which is a funny thing. I don't have a ton of notes, or I have no notes, and I don't have any kind of structure to this. This is going to just be a chance for me to jump onto a few different rants and get on a few soapboxes here. What people don't know is, as passionate as I am about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that passion is also equaled to Kirk Cousins' career. He's one of my lifelong best friends. We grew up together. I still stay in touch with him every week. And it's just been the craziest journey. So like when he wins the game last night against the Saints, my phone blows up. So I spent the entire evening literally talking to people on the phone. And so some of these rants are going to be a recreation the morning after, a recreation of some of those phone calls that I had last night. But this kind of speaks to the person Kirk is. I still stay in touch with one of the radio guys from Washington, D.C., and I really stay in touch with one of the athletic writers in Minnesota, as you know, because on this podcast, if you go back 2 years to Friends From Football, I had Grant Paulson and Alec Lewis on the show with me, but we still talk about football all the time. And so whenever Kirk gets a chance to play like this, we jump on here and, or jump on a phone call and just go ham. Not to mention all of Kirk's family, friends. We have a literal text thread called Kirk Support LLC of just some friends without Kirk on that text thread that just is super active. So anyways, I don't have any plans, but we're going to see what we stumble upon here. So the obvious caveat to all this is that I am very biased toward Kirk Cousins, and I am very anti how things went down with the Atlanta Falcons. I personally feel like he was kind of misled, he was lied to, and so from the time he tore his Achilles, which was such a bummer because he was on an MVP-like run, and I think the Vikings would have been very competitive in the playoffs in 2023. His life, and as a fan, my life following him, has just been such a bummer when it comes to football. So he signs with Atlanta, but immediately after he signs, they draft Michael Penix 8th overall. And really from that moment on, it created a chasm that was kind of irreparable, because Kirk's timeline in Atlanta was 4 to 6 years. And the second they drafted him, the timeline became 4 to 6 months, which I just didn't think was very fair to him. Now, obviously, financially, he's still set. So kind of jokes on them when it comes to the money part of it. But as far as the legacy and wanting to win and play, it's such a bummer that they did that. It created a chasm right away. Anyways, you probably know that. So last year, even despite having an ankle and an Achilles that was still really sore and he couldn't move much, they got out to a 6-3 start. And Kirk had, like, I think he was third in the NFL in touchdowns, was doing pretty well on all analytical metrics. And then he took a hit to his shoulder against the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans last year and kind of sprained his shoulder in his throwing elbow. And this is where we're not going to rehash last year, but where he, like, in hindsight, he should have at that point pulled himself out and said, "Hey, my arm hurts. Give me a few weeks to get settled." And this would probably still be his team if he did that. But he, you know, obviously being worried about the 8th overall pick sitting behind you, as any player would, probably didn't want to pull himself out. And so he tried to play through it and just played really poorly. But the chasm that was growing too of distrust between the Falcons as an organization and Kirk was growing large. The play calling in Atlanta was really not suited towards what he does. It's a first-time play caller last year in Zach Robinson. It was all out of the pistol, whereas Kirk is best under center. Kirk is best with play action, and it was so much pistol, not play action, no bootlegs, all the things that Kirk does well. So anyways, combination of factors led to them losing a bunch of games, and Kirk got benched. And this offseason was a really weird and kind of dark place for us because he was wrestling with his future and what that meant. We, as family and friends and fans, had really had our Sundays and our fall scheduled around his career for 12 years. So for 12 years, it was planning trips to games. It was having people over to our house to watch the games. People don't realize how, like, I went to 8 games in 2018, all the home games. My family, like my parents, come to a game. My brother comes to a game. I take friends to a game. I meet other friends from high school at a game. So usually, like, 4 to 5, I go with my wife to a game. I usually end up planning 4 to 5 trips, and all of a sudden that was all gone. So, and then for him, I think it was just a weird, dark season where you're trying to wrestle with a lot of these feelings and thoughts. But kind of going into the year this year, the feeling for me was the system is just not good enough. The system, play calling, coaching isn't good enough in Atlanta. And that's such a bummer because I actually think they have some pieces to be competitive, but the way it's set up, and I could go on and on and on and on about behind the scenes stories that I'm not going to share, but it's just not set up to be successful. And so I think that's a little bit evidenced in Michael Penix's year this year. The Falcons were 3-7 when Kirk finally took over. I guess 3-6 because one of those losses he played in. And so, like, if Michael Penix is the 8th overall pick and he's such an improvement, which I got nothing against Mike, then the offense should look better. They had an entire offseason to build the offense around Michael Penix, their 8th overall pick. So how come when they get to these games, are they still losing, doing the exact same things that happened to Kirk during his losing streak last year? The coaching just isn't good enough. It's not good enough. They're still not building in the things that Michael does well. There's no deep ball throwing, even though Michael has a huge arm. They don't throw over the middle much. There's almost no play action. There is literally no bootlegs. They don't have draws in the playbook because quite literally the offensive line coach doesn't believe in them. So there's no end of rounds, there's no draws, there's no bootlegs, there's very little play action. It's just an incredibly boring scheme. And maybe you can get away with that if your receivers are Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson or Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs or Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson. Like, maybe you get away with that, but you don't get away with that when your receivers are Casey Washington, Darnell Mooney, and David Sills. You can win with players like that. You just need Sean McVay level of creativity, Kyle Shanahan level of creativity to make it work. And so, yeah, Penix has struggled. The coaching staff has struggled. I still think that they should let go of the offensive coordinator. It's not going to succeed on a large level. However, that's not why I'm here today. That's all background to say I'm here today because Kirk Cousins and the Atlanta Falcons had a pretty big 24-10 win over the New Orleans Saints yesterday. And while it was a 3-7 team versus a 2-8 team, so you think to yourself, Kyle, this literally doesn't matter. I'm here because my friend played in an NFL game and threw 2 more touchdowns, tied Johnny Unitas for the 17th most touchdowns in the history of the NFL. If he can get to 300, only 15 guys have ever thrown 300 touchdowns in their career. He's only 10 away from that. Absolutely remarkable. Last night was so much fun again. Last night was that feeling of joy that I haven't had with football in 2 years. And my brother and his wife came over. We're sitting there eating pizza. Our kids are playing upstairs. And it was just like, yeah, this is what it used to feel like. This is fun. So we'll talk about the future at the end of this podcast. I still think that the Falcons need to let go of their coaching staff. But I could not believe my eyes last night with how different yesterday looked than last season. Not different in like, oh, they're doing the same offense, but here's a few play actions sprinkled in. No, it was firmly, strongly the opposite way. At one point, they called four under center play action passes in a row. So a few things that were totally different to me. I mean, unrecognizable. Last year, Kirk was in the pistol almost 90% of the time. Last night, he was under center or in shotgun a ton of the time. Incredible. Huge change. Yesterday, there was a pick six on a deflected ball to Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts is not good. Man, he's not good. Three drops yesterday. Just not a good player, and people won't let him go because they don't want to be wrong about drafting him fourth overall. But anyways, Kyle drops a ball. It goes through his hands. He gets picked off. Last year, that would have been shut it down. Kirk's going to turn the ball over and hand it off five times on the next offensive possession. The very next offensive possession after the pick six was when they threw it five times in a row. I love that. So different from last year. Unrecognizable. Last year, one of my frustrations was anytime the offense got the ball right before half with, let's say, 45 seconds left, you have one timeout and you get the ball in the 20. We were such a conservative coaching staff last year where we would just hand it off. Maybe if Bijan gets 15 yards, we'll call a pass after that, but we'd hand it off and just let's get to halftime. Whereas Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, it was always, oh my goodness, we can get into field goal range with this easily. Let's take a couple shots, see if we can get 3 points. What happened yesterday? Same thing. They get the ball with like 40 seconds left for halftime, and they were aggressive down the field, moving the ball down the field, and it led to a 3-point field goal kick from Zane Gonzalez. I didn't recognize this team. Night and day. Incredible. And then the last thing I'll say is, on Tuesday, I was on a jog, and Kirk called me. And we were talking about how one of the things Atlanta needs, especially with Drake London injured, is just a natural receiver. They need somebody who just has a high IQ, runs the right routes, makes contested catches. There's just no real natural receivers on that team. And Kirk says to me, well, you know, there actually is a guy in the practice squad that I think could be that. His name is something Drummond. But they won't put him on the roster because, you know, other people have contracts and he's not going to get his chance. Well, all of a sudden I'm watching the game yesterday and this guy named Drummond makes three catches. Were they unbelievable catches? No. But does it matter? No. Because the point is, somewhere in the week, Kirk must have talked to the staff and said, hey, this guy Drummond is a natural receiver that we kind of need right now. And they listened to him. What a shocking revelation. They listened to him and they elevated Drummond to the roster. And now he might be on the roster going forward. So it was just an unrecognizable game. And a lot of Falcons fans and Falcons media today that I saw are almost up in arms because they're saying, what took us this long to run this kind of offense? Where was this all year? Why don't we do this under center stuff with Michael Penix? And what people don't realize is, they're not doing it because Michael Penix is really passive about this stuff. It's his first year starting. He doesn't know this stuff. But Kirk has been fired up and angry and frustrated in a dark place because the offense hasn't been good. And so when you start Kirk Cousins, you're not just getting him as a player. You're getting his leadership and his intensity. And his leadership and intensity are the things that are driving the coaching staff to go, we better change and call play action passes or this is not going to go well. It's because Kirk is marching in to the meeting room saying, we have to do this. We have to elevate Drummond. We have to get me under center. What would happen if you actually called some play action for me? And so Kirk is what's making this happen. It doesn't just happen because now all of a sudden they're like, oh. So that's what Falcons fans need to realize. Kirk has a level of professionalism that not just every quarterback has. You don't get to the 15th most touchdown passes of all time by just kind of haphazardly being okay. It's the leadership and the intensity that comes with it, not just the on-the-field stuff. But as a side note, the on-the-field stuff, man, if did my heart so good. That deep ball to Mooney, just absolutely ridiculously good. So I have two other tangents I want to say. Last night was so much fun. I don't know where the season's going to go. It's such a bummer that they're 3-7 when Kirk took over, just because that feels like you're so far out of it. I will say, you play the Jets next week. If you can somehow get to 5-7, the Tampa Bay Bucks, as I sit here today, Baker Mayfield might be injured, and they're 6-5, so it's not like they're running away with the division. If they were to lose next week to get to 6-6 and you're 5-7, I mean, that would be the most insane thing, but the season might not be over for the Falcons, which is crazy, especially if they're going to call the offense like this. And Kirk only gets more and more confident, because, man, I thought he looked comfortable in this yesterday. Still not the best offense ever. It's still not Kyle Shanahan. It's not Sean McVay. It's not Kevin O'Connell. It's not Matt LaFleur. But I think you can make some headway if they're going to call the game like this and you get Drake London back. Okay, anyways, two other tangents. One is going to be about the Minnesota Vikings, and then one's going to be an update on the future for Kirk. So this entire time, this entire offseason, ever since Kirk was benched, the goal, I guess, the mission was, let's get Kirk off the Falcons. There's no future in Atlanta. There's no future in Atlanta. Ever since they drafted the 8th overall pick, and they love him, they want to play him, there's no future there. So it doesn't matter how good you play Kirk, he's not going to be in Atlanta. So it's kind of been like mission, let's get off Atlanta. And so it's like, you could retire and just call it and say, this is kind of the end of the career, which would be kind of a bummer. Although it's been an amazing ride, or we can try to get traded. Atlanta's not going to cut him because a lot of factors that I can't get into right now. This podcast would take 3 hours, but so he ends up not getting cut. Now it's like, man, are we just going to waste valuable years? He doesn't have a ton left, just sitting on the bench. And so it's been a really frustrating thing. But all along the while, I kind of started thinking, you know where the fit for him is? It's actually going back to Minnesota. As you start going through the options of who would trade for him, who would take on the contract, who needs a quarterback, you know, who doesn't need a quarterback, the lists are getting smaller and smaller. Because it's like if you're, you know, midseason, especially if you're a really bad team, let's say you're the Tennessee Titans, there's no point in trading for Kirk because you're already going to be bad no matter what. So what? Instead of 2-15, you get to 4-13. Cool. What does that get you? A worse draft pick. There's no value in that. And if you're one of the top 5-7 teams, there's no value in getting Kirk barring a catastrophic injury because you're top 5-7 because you have a quarterback. So they don't need Kirk. They're not going to trade for somebody and take on a contract when they're already one of the 5-7 best teams. So it's weird. It had to have been a team that was, you know, in that 8-16 range and was competitive, felt like their playoff and championship window is open, but they don't have the quarterback play to do that. So you start going through those teams at the deadline a month ago. There weren't many. But all while this is happening, I'm staying in touch with people from Minnesota, and I start seeing some of the details and the behind the scenes and go, wow, this might actually be a fit. The best fit for Kirk might be for Minnesota to trade for him at the deadline. They still have a competitive defense. They feel like they have some older free agents that are ready to compete right now, not next year, not 5 years from now, but right now. And they're losing games because their quarterback play is so bad. So I kind of thought that was going to happen. We started trying to manifest it. And I'm watching last night thinking, yeah, it's absolutely mind-blowing to me that the Minnesota Vikings could have had, man, I'm clearing my throat a lot. I'll have to edit that out, but I talked so much last night. I don't have a voice. The Minnesota Vikings could have had Sam Darnold, Kirk Cousins, Aaron Rodgers, or Daniel Jones. But because of ego or stubbornness or whatever it is, they chose J.J. McCarthy. And when you watch a game like they had against the Packers and the way the season's been going, how bad must that flight home have been for Kevin O'Connell to watch that kind of performance from J.J. McCarthy, get on the plane and see the highlights from Sam Darnold in Seattle over the Tennessee Titans, and then go, I'll just flip on a game. I'm going to take the flight home. Like, I'm bored. Let's put on a game. And the game on is Kirk versus the Saints, and he has to watch Kirk hit Darnell Mooney for 60 yards downfield, 55 of those yards or 50 of those yards in the air, a throw that looked easy for Kirk, which is why he can't retire. How painful must have that been for Kevin O'Connell? I feel really bad for the Vikings fans, but I don't feel bad for the team. It's just mind-blowing to me that the organization, the coaches and the GMs, this is the bed they chose. They chose this. And now they have to lie in it. And like, it just, the line of thinking for the last year just never made sense to me from the Vikings perspective. It's truly mind-blowing. Here's the myth, guys, about a rookie quarterback. Because, okay, the dream for a team like Minnesota is they go, well, look, we don't have to pay Sam or Kirk, and so we can save that money if we draft a rookie quarterback. We can save that money because we're not paying him, and we can use it on other pieces, and then he can be really good and our championship window can be open. But here's where it doesn't work. First of all, even if you pick the quarterback correct, which is already a very, very small chance. If you look at the hit rate of first round quarterbacks over the last 10 years, it's already not good. It's not like you're batting 90% or batting 900. It's like a 30, 20% kind of thing. So even if you get lucky and you do get one of the guys that you feel like can be a 10-year NFL starter, none of those guys, literally almost zero, have ever been successful in their first or second years. And I don't mean successful like have a good season. I mean, you're not winning the Super Bowl, if that's the goal, with a first or second year quarterback. Has it ever happened? I think it has. I think Russell Wilson did it in 2014 in his, that might have been his third year. No, that was his second year. He won the Super Bowl in his second year, I think. And I know Patrick Mahomes sat a year and then had a really good year. I don't remember if he won the Super Bowl, but it's almost never happened. Point is, it's nearly impossible to nail a first-round draft pick, put him in his first year, build a team around him, and have him by year two winning a Super Bowl. Is it possible to have him get to the playoffs? Yes. But what's so crazy is the Vikings were in a championship window. They didn't want to just make the playoffs. They wanted to win the Super Bowl. And you know that as evidenced by the amount of money they spent in free agency. They also spent money in free agency, by the way, because they're so bad at drafting that you have to pay guys because none of your draft picks are playing. Anyways, so you go with a first and second year quarterback, even if he is good. Let's just say he's amazing, okay? Which is already a tiny, tiny, tiny chance. But let's say you hit the lottery. He's amazing, like Patrick Mahomes. Okay, well then guess what? You have a one-year window because year one and two, he's not good enough to take you to the Super Bowl. He's still learning. Then year three is your 1 year where if everything lines up, you can say, yeah, we have a rookie quarterback in year three who has some experience, 2 years of experience, who hasn't been paid yet so we can build a team around him. But guess what, guys? You only get 1 year because even if he plays good in that year, guess what? Year four, he's demanding $60 million. So even in the scenario that the rookie quarterback is amazing, you are right back to where you started. And yet Sam Darnold and Kirk Cousins were only asking for $35 to $40 million. Even if J.J. McCarthy is all world, he's going to want $60 million in year three. You're going to have to extend him by year four. So the line of thinking just doesn't make sense to me. It's a one-year window. It's a flawed line of thinking. So that whole thing is crazy to me. Now you look at the success of Darnold and Kirk and even Aaron a little bit, Aaron Rodgers, definitely Daniel Jones. You had all the right guys in the building and you chose the wrong guy. And so I feel so bad for Vikings fans because Minnesota is in a horrible spot. They've drafted so poorly. There's no young talent to build around. All the people, their best players are still ones that were drafted by Rick Spielman, Justin Jefferson, Christian Darrisaw, Brian O'Neill. These are not Kwesi Adofa-Mensah picks. So they haven't drafted well. They're getting old. They're aging. And then because they're aging, they're having some injury problems. And they're led by, statistically, one of the worst quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. I saw something today of like, I'm going to mess this up, but in the last X amount of years, it's been 820 quarterbacks. In EPA, which is estimated points added, it's a really analytical stat that tries to evaluate quarterbacks on a better level than passer rating, let's say. I'm not going to get into the weeds with that, but he's 819 of 820. Think about that for a second. He's literally not a starting quarterback. He's not even a professional quarterback. He might not be an NFL player, and that's who they're running out. And they're running him out because Kevin O'Connell is, quote, the quarterback whisperer. Who is he whispered? I don't get it. Who is he whispered? Nick Mullins, I guess? Josh Dobbs for two games? Because Sam Darnold was with Kyle Shanahan before he went to Minnesota. So there was some seasoning there. And Sam Darnold is very successful this year with Clint Kubiak in Seattle. Kirk was successful before Kevin O'Connell. I think he'll still prove, if Zach Robinson is let go, that he can be successful without Kevin O'Connell. And I love Kevin O'Connell. But to think that he's just some quarterback whisperer that we can just draft anybody like J.J. McCarthy and just run out the team, I feel bad for Vikings fans, man. They're in a bad spot. They're going to have to go back to the well. They're going to have to draft again. Are you going to spend a first-round pick on another quarterback? Or you have to sign a bridge guy. And then if you sign a bridge guy, like Kirk next year or something, now the roster is a year older and you haven't drafted well. So there aren't pieces or people to replace. People that are getting old and retiring or getting cut or getting injured. So anyways, it's not a Vikings podcast anymore, but they're in a bad spot. Yesterday, so I guess my 3 points, these are my rants I'm stumbling upon. Yesterday was awesome to witness Kirk again playing. It was crazy to just see the stubbornness and the ego of the Vikings that they didn't make a change. And by the way, Kirk's agent called the Vikings at the deadline. I mean, Kirk was trying to get out of Atlanta. He said, I want to come play for you. And they couldn't pull the trigger because of J.J. McCarthy. That was the story. They can't give up on this kid. Okay, well, it's just crazy to me that you're going to give up on your season then. So that's point two. Here's point three. I spend so much time thinking about Kirk's future. There's been a lot of talk internally about Kirk maybe just quitting or retiring if he doesn't get a chance to play. If you watched last night, you can't quit. You can't quit if that's how you're going to look. Look, when Drew Brees and Peyton Manning retired, they couldn't throw the ball 30 yards. And that's not an exaggeration. Peyton Manning had a neck issue. Drew Brees' arm had gone. They couldn't push the ball down the field at all. Kirk threw the ball yesterday in the air 52 yards, and it looked pretty easy for him. You don't walk away if you can still throw it like that. You don't. There wasn't a single ball yesterday that was put into harm's way outside of the interception to Kyle Pitts, which was still a great throw, just contested, went through Kyle's hands. You could argue he's being held. But he looked so comfortable yesterday. You don't quit. You don't quit if you have that kind of ability. I'm such a firm believer that the system, setup, and play calling matters so much for all of these NFL quarterbacks, so much more than even fans think. When you get a peek behind the scenes, you realize it's so much more than fans think. As evidenced by Sam Darnold, goes to Minnesota, has the year he has, the year he's having in Seattle with Clint Kubiak. It's because of the coaching, the setup, and the system that he looks that different than he did in New York or in Carolina. Kirk leading the league in touchdowns in 2023 in Minnesota when he gets injured. 3 weeks after he gets injured, the Vikings play a game against the Raiders to a score of 3-0. The Vikings were like one of the five best offenses in the world when Kirk was in there. He got injured and they could not score a touchdown against the Raiders. That's how far it fell. You couldn't get a touchdown. Kirk, having that kind of year, goes to Atlanta, and the back half of the year happens. So you don't think the system and play calling matter? You think Kirk just all of a sudden forgot how to play football in the middle of the year? There are so many examples of this. Look at Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield,
in Cleveland had some games that I thought he might be the worst quarterback of the 32 starting quarterbacks. They eventually let him go. He gets rehabbed a little bit in Carolina, some in Los Angeles, finally finds his home in Tampa. Look what happened. Now he looks like one of the 15 best players in the NFL. Do you think it's just because he all of a sudden figured it out? Or does the system, play calling, coaching matter more than anyone thinks? Geno Smith couldn't play anywhere. Goes to Seattle. Looks the way he did. I mean, this happens time and time again. It makes you wonder how many players are drafted by the Jets or by the Browns that just never flourish, ever, that could have been good players elsewhere. The system fit, play calling matters so much, it would blow your mind. And it's the reason why the Falcons aren't going to be competitive for a Super Bowl, because they don't have the offensive system play calling that would ever compete on that level. It's also the reason why Sean McVay in Los Angeles is able to go all in for a Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, and then have to totally rebuild in under 5 years, build it back up to where they're probably the Super Bowl favorites right now too. He has been able to go to two Super Bowls already. I think a third is in their near future, all in the time that Minnesota or Atlanta is still trying to figure out how to get to the playoffs. That's an exaggeration a little bit, obviously, because Minnesota has been there twice in the last couple of years. But you know what I'm saying? The system coaching matters so much more than the average fan thinks. And so, with that being said, I've just been thinking and talking to Kirk about, we have to get him in a place where he trusts the coach and the system more than any specific player or what the defense is going to be. Trying to pick who's the next great team is really hard to do. But is there a way for him to sync up with one of his former coaches? Like, for example, if Clint Kubiak in Seattle, if they have a great year in Seattle, like they're kind of trending right now, and he gets a head coaching job, that's someone who would maybe want Kirk for a couple more years. So maybe Clint Kubiak takes the head coaching job in Nashville and Kirk is the quarterback here. Or maybe Arizona lets go of their coach. Clint Kubiak gets the job there. Matt LaFleur, if he were to get let go in Green Bay, which I think would be the dumbest thing ever, I don't think it's going to happen, but there's been some rumors of that. Immediately, that is destination number one for Kirk. He's a former quarterback coach of Kirk's. But also Matt would want Kirk, I think. So if Matt LaFleur took the job in, let's say there's another opening, who else? There's not many openings. But let's say he gets the job somewhere, Matt would call Kirk. So we've been like thinking, where could Kirk go? How could Kirk get out of here? Could he get back to Minnesota? Although that ship, I think, has sailed. There's a lot of like destinations that don't make sense. But kind of the underlying thought this entire time was he has no future in Atlanta as long as Michael Penix is there. Man, guys, here's my closing thought for the podcast today. I think Michael Penix's injury changes this entire outlook. Here's the thing. Michael Penix had to have full reconstruction of his ACL. First of all, he's missed 4 seasons with ACL injuries. So even if he comes back healthy, which is a huge question mark, he wasn't playing that good before that. Is it possible that Michael Penix's future isn't in Atlanta? I mean, can you build a team around a guy who has been injured that much? And again, I have nothing against Michael. I think he could be a good player in the NFL, but I don't know that you can do that. And even if you decide you want to build around him, he's not going to be ready for 9 months. It's a 9-month recovery. So at best, he's ready in September. So now the Falcons, they would need somebody else. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I think there's a chance that the entire staff gets let go. So if Kirk plays really well down the stretch here and they win some games, then I don't think Arthur Blank will let go of the staff because Kirk will have essentially saved their jobs. But I think then Kirk would have leverage to sit down with the Falcons and go, hey, if you thought that was good, look what we could do if we hired a different offensive coordinator, at least. So I still think there's a chance of change there, but if he plays bad or average, then I think the entire Falcons coaching staff is going to get let go. But then who are they going to hire? They're going to hire Clint Kubiak, Matt LaFleur, or like John Gruden, let's say. And all three of those guys, I know, would say, I want Kirk here. And I think Kirk would stay for that. So for the first time in 2 years, I'm starting to think, I wonder if Kirk's future is in Atlanta. That sounds crazy. But watching the game on Sunday, I'm like, I don't think they're that far away from being competitive. Their defense is significantly improved. Their offensive line's pretty good. They run the ball. They obviously have Bijan and Tyler Algier, who are awesome. They would have to do a few things. You got to draft a receiver. You got to sign a free agent receiver. Okay. You need a couple pieces there, but I don't think they're that far away if they had good coaching. So if someone like John Gruden, Matt LaFleur, Clint Kubiak came in and ran the system that suited Kirk because of their past together, I think this is a contending team, as crazy as that sounds. That's how poorly I think the coaching has been in Atlanta. And I think one tweak to that, a couple draft picks here or there contributing, and I think they're in a really good spot to compete. So I guess I'm wondering this early, now it's November 24, so we don't have to figure this out till February, but I'm wondering if the future for Kirk's going to be in Atlanta with a different offensive system, which I think would get me really excited. It would get me really excited to not have to move again, not have to change teams. He doesn't want to pick up his family and move them all the time again. So I think if he plays like this, there are going to be options for him. And that's the exciting part. It's either going to be in Atlanta or maybe Minnesota wants to make a desperate move to get him back. Although, like I said, there's a lot of question marks there. Maybe those guys I mentioned take a job elsewhere. Maybe he can finish his career in Nashville in the new stadium and we can hang out every day. But I think there will be options if he continues to play like this. So I guess those are the three rants I stumbled upon. The game was fun yesterday, and I think it was a different team for the Falcons than I anticipated. The Vikings are in a bad spot, and the NFL in general continues to wow me in how big the egos are in these front offices that they won't admit that they made a mistake with someone like Kyle Pitts or J.J. McCarthy, and they'll hang on to that. So the Vikings are in a bad spot. And then the third tangent being, I think that Kirk's going to have a future if he wants to keep playing, especially if he's playing like this, and that future might end up being in Atlanta. I have so many tangents. I know this is so scattered. This is like 30 minutes or so. I could do this for hours and hours and hours, but I don't think it'd be worthwhile. I know there's no crossover. I know no one's listening to this at this point. I'll just say if the Falcons go on a run, I might check in a few times on a football podcast, maybe get somebody on, maybe get Kirk to come on here just because it could be fun again. And I think if I could see a world where Kirk does have a future, like if he's lined up as a starter in a season where we're anticipating the team, whatever team he's on, doing well, I'll bring this podcast back next year. That'd be really, really fun. But I'm here because I'm so freaking passionate about football and his career in the NFL, and I follow it religiously, and I just got to talk about it at times. I get so excited that I don't know what else to do but talk about it. Thanks for listening. I don't know if we'll see another time on Friends from Football, but I really appreciate the people who have tuned into this. I'd love to hear your thoughts. We could do another episode just about crazy stories in the NFL. Like maybe we need to do a around the NFL episode, but I appreciate y'all and we'll see you some other time. Otherwise, check out Friends from Work as new Marvel content is coming soon. We'll be busy over there. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon here on Friends from Football.